Vansa kaputurubhyascha kripasindhu bhaibhascha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namah. We've been hearing about the descendants of King Priyavrata, the elder of the sons of Uttanapad. In the last chapter, we heard how the grandson of Priyavrata, whose name is Nabi, how he was performing a sacrifice for the purpose of having a son. The priests of that sacrificial performance, when the Lord actually appeared before them, they, in one sense, were quite embarrassed because they felt themselves so petty, having performed the sacrifice to ask the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of everything, to ask Him for a son. Just a son. It's not very difficult to have a son. But yet Nabi, he didn't want an ordinary son. He wanted a son just like the Lord. Practically speaking, because he was pure in heart, he wanted to have the Lord himself as his son. This is one of the relationships that it's possible to have with God, with Krishna. Usually when we think of God and we think of a human being's relationship with Him, we think of one like this, and He is the Supreme, and we are completely tiny and insignificant. We think of Him, if anything, as in the position of Father. And what is the position of the Son in relationship to Father? Please may I have this, please may I have this, benedict me with this, benedict me with that, please, I have this need, I have this desire. But contrary to that, and Krishna is so kind to his devotee that if the devotee wants to express love of God in the mood of having God as his son, the love from father to son is of a different category, of a different quality, because the son acts as if he is completely dependent upon the father. And therefore it's the father's mood that if I do not take care of this boy, of this child, what will happen to him? So Nabi wanted to have that type of loving relationship with the Lord himself. He wanted to have that type of filial affection with Krishna. And therefore that was the purpose of his sacrifice. And because he was a pure devotee, a great soul, what does it mean to be a pure devotee? Anya vilasita sanyam jnana kamaranavrita anakulena krishna nashilanam bhakta uttama. This means that one's love for the Lord is not tinged with any selfishness whatsoever. Anya vilasita sunyam. No desires other than to please that personality, that Lord. Or, in other words, again, there is no selfishness in the relationship, because every relationship we have in the material world, even though we may call it love, but it is tinged with selfishness, self-interest. It is tinged with lust. I want to get something in return. But that is not purity. That is not pure love. So Nabi, the king, he had this desire purely, and therefore the Lord came and he benedicted him that I will come as your son. And that son, as we'll hear as we read this chapter, and in the last chapter Srila Prabhupada had many purports, but this chapter has much less. We won't read very many of them even, so maybe we'll have an opportunity for questions at the end. So Sukadeva Goswami again was narrating this to Maharaj Prickett. And in the first verse he explains, as soon as the Lord was born as the son of Maharaj Nabi, he manifested symptoms of the Supreme Lord, such as the marks on the bottom of his feet, the flag, thunderbolt, etc. This son was equal to everyone and very peaceful. He could control his senses and his mind, and possessing all opulences, he did not hanker for material enjoyment. Endowed with all these attributes, the son of Maharaj Nabi became more powerful day after day. Due to this, the citizens, learned brahmanas, demigods, and ministers wanted Rishabhdev to be appointed ruler of the earth. So Maharaj Rishabhdev wasn't a cheap incarnation. Nowadays, there are many people often have exported from India, but not only in that way, but people think or claim that they're God. This, of course, is absurd. But that doesn't mean that God cannot come to this world, but it means that it's not cheap, and he has specific symptoms, and those symptoms which are revealed in the scriptures, in the shastras, have to be met. So he has specific features, and depending upon how he comes and where he comes and what his mission is, he has different moods in his incarnations. So Rishabhdev was going to teach something very, very, very special, and that won't really be revealed until the end of his life, his end of his incarnation in this world. So prior to that time, he acted, as we'll hear, as the ideal king, as the ideal ruler, as the ideal monarch. And he was loved by all the citizens, because who could be more worthy of love and more attractive to one's love than God? So he attracted the heart of all the citizens. And everyone wished him to rule the earth as the king. Text 2. When the son of Maharaj Nabi became visible, he evinced all good qualities described by the great poets, namely well-built body with all the symptoms of the Godhead, prowess, strength, beauty, name, fame, influence, and enthusiasm. When the father, Maharaj Nabi, saw all these qualities, he thought his son to be the best of human beings, or the supreme being, and therefore he gave him the name Rishabh. Rishabh literally means the best. Indra, the king of heaven, who was very materially opulent, became envious of King Rishabhdev. Consequently, he stopped pouring water on the planet known as Bharatvarsha. At that time, the Supreme Lord Rishabhdev, the master of all mystic power, understood King Indra's purpose and smiled a little. Then, by his own prowess, through his internal potency, Yogamaya, he profusely poured water upon his own place, which was known as Ajanab. So we'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport here. King Rishabhdev is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and therefore he was the original Bhagawan. Bhagawan means? What does Bhagawan mean? He who possesses, the possessor of all opulence. So he was Bhagawan. Consequently, he, or the Lord, is described here as Yogeshwar, which indicates that he is the most powerful spirit. He has the most powerful spiritual potency. He is not dependent on King Indra for water. He can supply water himself, and he did so in this case. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated, Yagyad Bhavati Parjanya, due to the performance of Yagya, clouds of water are manifest in the sky due to piety, the piety of the living entities that makes rain rainfall properly. When people are impious, then there is drought. So due to the performance of sacrifice, pious activities, clouds of water are manifest in the sky. Clouds and rainfall are under the management of Indra, the heavenly king. But when Indra is neglectful, the Supreme Lord himself, who is also known as Jagya or Jagyapati, or the Lord of Sacrifices, takes the task upon himself. Consequently, there was sufficient rainfall in the place named Ajanab. When the Jagyapati wants to, he can do anything without the help of any subordinate. In this age of Kali, the age of confusion and quarrel and impiety in which we live, there is a great scarcity and ignorance. Nonetheless, everyone can perform Sankirtan Jagya, the chanting of Krishna's names. Every family and every society can conduct Sankirtan Jagya at least every evening. In this way, there will be no disturbance or scarcity of rain. It is essential for people in this age to perform the Sankirtan Jagya, or the congregational chanting of God's names, in order to be materially happy and to advance spiritually. Text 4. So what did Rishabhdev Maharaj do? There was a blockage due to the envy of King Indra, the demigod in charge of rainfall. And he cut off the rain. But Rishabhdev himself, being the Lord, just circumvented King Indra and he made rainfall in his own place. What is difficult for God to do? Text 4. Due to getting a perfect son according to his desire, King Nabi was always overwhelmed with transcendental bliss and was very affectionate to his son, because it's so natural that a father loves his son. So imagine what type of love would be present when the father is the son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How much love would naturally be attracted to that boy, to that son, from the father. It was with ecstasy and a faltering voice that he addressed him, that he addressed his son, Rishabhdev, "My dear son, my darling." This mentality was brought about by Yogamaya, whereby he accepted the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Father, as his own son. Out of his supreme goodwill, the Lord became his son and dealt with everyone as if he were an ordinary human being. Thus King Nabi began to raise his transcendental son with great affection, and he was overwhelmed with transcendental bliss, joy, and devotion. So there's different types of illusion or maya. In this world, everyone is captivated by illusion or maya, not seeing things accurately. We think we are the body. That is illusion. Because if we are our bodies, which body are we? Are we the body that we had when we were 4 years old? Because that was us. If we are our body, which body are we? Are we the body we had when we were 12 years old? 15, 20, 30, the body we will have when we're 60 years old? If we're the body, which one are we? But actually, there is a continuity of identity within the bodies, because we are not actually the body. We are souls. We are eternal, while the body is temporary. It is a housing for the soul. So one type of illusion makes us think that we're the body, and makes us think that we can become happy by gaining so many material facilities, that we can be happy in the miserable material world, which has been certified by Krishna as Dukkhalayama Shashvatam Anitya Sukhya Loka. Certified as a miserable place. Why? Because everything is temporary in the material world. And we long from the core of our heart for an eternal situation, for eternal love, for eternal relationships. So So one type of illusion makes us think that we are our body. This is called Maya, and makes us think that that we can actually make ourselves a secure situation in the material world. But there's another type of illusion that is of a different quality. This Maya that we describe, that type of illusion, is a reflection of Yoga Maya, which can cover the feeling that this baby is God. Because if one is thinking this baby is God, even though he may be God, then how much love can one express towards him? One can't have a full expression of filial love, because one will be thinking, oh, he's the Supreme Lord, I must bow to him. What do I have to give him? He is the one who is supplying everything. So there'll be due to reverence and awe, love, the full love will not be able to manifest. So this is called Yoga Maya, where a great devotee becomes unaware that the Lord is the Lord and thinks of him as his son. And the purpose of that is to allow his natural and pure love for the Lord to manifest to its fullest. So it facilitates devotion. It facilitates love of God. It facilitates the ecstasy of the soul. And the other type of illusion, Maya, it covers the soul's real consciousness. So Maharaj Nabi, he even though he knew that his son was the Lord, he was able to forget that. So his natural love for the Lord could be manifest in the mood of father. Text 5. King Nabi understood that his son Rishabdev was very popular amongst the citizens and amongst government officers and ministers. Understanding the popularity of his son, Maharaj Nabi enthroned him as the emperor of the world to give protection to the general populace in terms of the Vedic religious system. To do this, he entrusted him in the hands of learned brahmanas, or the aristocratic learned religious personages, who would guide him in administering the government. Then Maharaj Nabi and his wife, Meridevi, went to Badrik Ashram in the Himalaya Mountains, where the king engaged himself very expertly in austerities and penances with great jubilation. In full samadhi, in full fixedness of mind, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who was Krishna in his plenary expansion. By doing so, in course of time, Maharaj Nabi was elevated to the spiritual world known as Vaikuntha. So Prabhupada's purporting, this is quite long, we'll read a bit of it. Maharaj Nabi, although still a king, retired from family life and went with his wife to a place called Badrik Ashram in the Himalayas, where the deity Narayan is worshipped. The words prasanna nipunena tapasa indicate that the king accepted all kinds of austerity very expertly and jubilantly. He did not at all mind leaving his comfortable life at home, although he was the emperor. Despite undergoing severe austerities and penances, he felt very pleased at Badrik Ashram, and he did everything there expertly. In this way, by being fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, samadhi yoga, always thinking of Krishna, Vasudev, Maharaj Nabi attained success at the end of his life and was promoted to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha Loka. So there is a pastime going on here where the king, although he had his son, who was the Lord, with him, he renounced that to set the example for people. And what is that example for people in general? That one should not remain engrossed in materialistic life right to the end of his life. Even if one has a full material facility, being the king even, still, at least towards the end of one's life, one should increase one's religiosity for the purpose of increasing one's love of God. And to do that, decrease one's material dependence. Because at the time of death, those material comforts, the material conveniences, those material things that we are attached to will cause us the greatest trouble. And actually, at the time of death, there is only one shelter. Our body will not be a shelter, and that's what we depend on so much in our life. Our mind won't be a shelter. The whims of the mind, our intelligence, no matter how agile our intelligence is, no matter how many abilities, and no matter how many difficult situations our intelligence has gotten us out of in our life, no matter how much it has helped us in our life, no matter how much we've organized our life around comfort and convenience, at the time of death, everything will let us down, even our own body, our own mind. So to prepare for that moment, it takes practice. One can't live a whimsical life and then expect at the moment of death to fully depend on God with full faith, with full consciousness, with full love. One cannot expect that. It will not happen. If we live a materialistic life, the time of death will be the most terrifying for us. And that itself is so dangerous. In this world, we tend to try to avoid any difficult and anxiety-filled situation. Why? Because naturally, no one likes that. We feel uncomfortable. We like pleasure. We like things to go our way. So we usually think of situations that are not favorable on one level. We think of them as negative, and we think of when it's raining pleasure from the sky, we think of that as wonderful, but actually it's the opposite. If we understand that life's purpose is to prepare, to develop love of Krishna, to develop love of God, to depend fully upon Him, then the difficulties become blessings in disguise, because we should watch very carefully how we react to difficult situations. Do we just become disturbed, angry, blaming everyone else? Or do we learn how to see our own faults, our own attachments, our own debilities, and even though we may be disturbed, take shelter very deeply of God, of Krishna, chanting His name sincerely from the core of our heart, depending upon Him despite our weakness? The difficult times are tests in the sense that they... we usually think of a test because of our school days. We think of tests as something that it has to do with grading and what marks we're going to get on a report card or something like that. But the purpose of a test is something completely different. It's to let us know how we are doing, and also to let the teacher know how well his teaching has been effective. So the test lets us know how we've assimilated the purpose of life. And every day, practically speaking, although we don't want to see it like this, we have hundreds of tests. And we can gauge how well we are doing, how well we are learning to depend on Krishna, on God. So especially at the end of one's life, when one's death is looming closer, then one, cause when one is young and has a strong, healthy body, one generally has so much to do in his life, and he's looking at his life stretching before him with so many possibilities, so many opportunities. But then, when one is older, one can't be thinking like that. One should not be thinking like that. One should be very focused in one's desires, understanding the actual purpose of life. And one's desires should focus, preparing for the departure of the soul from the body. The body gets left behind. It will disintegrate. The soul will live forever. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire. There is no death for the soul. Preparing for that is the purpose of life. What is the proper preparation? To use one's life to develop love for Krishna, for God. So the king, to set the good example, even though he had love for God already, and the Lord had come at his son, he left everything, the most comfortable of all situations, and performed austerities and penance. And what did he do? He focused his mind upon the Lord with great love. That is perfection. If we can live our life always in the presence, by constantly thinking of Krishna, always in his presence, that is perfection. And that will be the most valuable asset. And that will be the only asset that we'll take, that we'll actually consider an asset when it's time to die. So Maharaj Nabi performed his austerities. Sukadeva Goswami continues, Maharaj Prakrit, he's speaking to Maharaj Prakrit, to glorify Maharaj Nabi, the old sages composed two verses. One of them is this: who can attain the perfection of Maharaj Nabi? Who can attain his activities? How rare it is to be able to have what he have. And what did he have? He had the Lord as his son. Because of his devotional service, the Supreme Personality of God had agreed to become his son. So his love attracted Maharaj Rishabdev of God to come as his son. So that is all we have to give to Krishna. Patram pushpam palam toyam yumam bhakta prasati. We heard this verse yesterday, that Krishna will accept if we offer him anything, a leaf even, a fruit, flower, or water, he will accept it if we offer it with devotion, with love. So that is the essential ingredient that we want to develop in our life. The second prayer. Who is a better worshipper of the Brahmanas than Maharaj Nabi, the Brahmana priests? Because he worshipped the qualified Brahmanas to their full satisfaction, the Brahmanas, by their brahminical prowess, showed Maharaj Nabi the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, in person. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The Brahmanas engaged as priests in the sacrificial ceremony were not ordinary Brahmanas. They were so powerful that they could bring forth the Supreme Personality of Godhead by their prayers. Thus Maharaj Nabi was able to see the Lord face to face. Unless one is a Vaishnava, a devotee, he cannot call forth the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord does not accept an invitation unless one is a Vaishnava. Therefore it is said in the Padma Purana, Satkama nipano vipro mantra tantra visharada Vaishnavo guru nasyad Vaishnava swa pacho guru. A scholarly Brahmana, expert in all subjects of Vedic knowledge, is unfit to become a spiritual master without being a Vaishnava. But a person born in a family of a lower caste can become a spiritual master if he is a Vaishnava. These Brahmanas were certainly very expert in chanting the Vedic mantras. They were competent in the performance of the Vedic rituals, and over and above this, they were Vaishnavas. Therefore, by their spiritual powers, they could call on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and enable their disciple, Maharaj Nabi, to see the Lord face to face. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that the word ojasa means by dint of devotional service. Their pure devotional service evoked the Lord to come, because there is no one who can force Krishna to do anything. Because by definition, God is the supreme controller. But his devotees' love can control him. This is the wonder of love of Krishna. It becomes, in that sense, even more powerful than Krishna. Text state. After Nabi Maharaj departed for Badrikashram, the Supreme Lord Rishabdev understood that his kingdom was his field of activities. He therefore showed himself as an example and taught the duties of a householder by first accepting brahmacharya studentship under the direction of spiritual masters. He also went to live at the spiritual master's place, Gurukul. After his education was finished, he gave gifts, Guru Dakshin, to his spiritual masters and then accepted the life of a householder. He got married. He took a wife named Jayanti and begot 100 sons who were as powerful and qualified as he himself. His wife Jayanti had been offered to him by Indra, the king of heaven. Rishabdev and Jayanti performed householder life in an exemplary way, carrying out ritualistic activities ordained by the Shruti and Smriti Shastras. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that in order to preach, one must live a practical life and show people how to do things. Apani achari bhakti sikhaimu savare. One cannot teach others unless he behaves the same way himself. Rishabdev was an ideal king, and he took his education in the Gurukula, although he was already educated, because the Supreme Lord is omniscient. Although Rishabdev had nothing to learn from Gurukula, he went there just to teach the people in general how to take an education from the right source, from Vedic teachers. He then entered household life and lived according to the principles of Vedic knowledge, Shruti and Smriti. So he set the example. And then at the end of the life, he will display another aspect of his mission. But now he's setting the example of the ideal king. Of Rishabdev's 100 sons, the eldest named Bharat was a great exalted devotee, qualified with the best attributes. In his honor, this planet became known as Bharatvarsh. Prabhupada's purport. This planet is known as Bharatvarsh, is also called Punyabhumi, the pious land. At the present moment, Bharatabhumi, or Bharatvarsh, is a small piece of land extending from the Himalayan mountains to Cape Comorin. Sometimes this peninsula is called Punyabhumi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given special importance to the people of this land. Bharatabhumite hoila manusha janmayar janma sattaka kare kara para upakar. One who has taken his birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharatvarsh, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. The inhabitants of this piece of land are very fortunate. They can purify their existence by accepting this Krishna consciousness movement and go outside Bharatabhumi, India, and preach this cult to benefit the whole world. 10. So Bharat was the foremost son, and he became the next ruler after Rishabdev. Following Bharat, there were 99 other sons. Amongst these were 9 elderly sons named Kusavarta, Ilavarta, Brahmavarta, Malaya, Ketu, Vajrasena, Indraspreek, Vidarbha, and Kikata. In addition to these sons were Kavi, Havi, Antariksha, Prabhuda, Pipalayana, Avihotra, Jumila, Chamas, and Karanabhaja. These were all very exalted advanced devotees and authorized preachers of Srimad Bhagavatam. These devotees were glorified due to their strong devotion to Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, they were very exalted. To satisfy the mind perfectly, I, Sukadeva Goswami, shall hereafter describe the characteristics of these 9 devotees when I discuss the conversation between Narada and Vasudeva. So these 9 sons of Maharaj Rishabdev were known as the Navayogendras, or the 9 Yogendras. And later in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, they will preach to Vasudeva. And in that canto, they'll actually predict the coming of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Karna Bhaja. In addition to these 19 sons mentioned above, there were 81 younger ones, all born of Rishabhdev and Jayanti. According to the order of their father, they became well-cultured, well-behaved, very pure in their activities, and expert in Vedic knowledge and performance of Vedic rituals. Thus, they all became perfectly qualified Brahmins. Prabhupada, in his purport, explains how even though they were sons of Kshatriyas, they became Brahmanas. So the caste system wasn't according to one's birth. It was according to one's qualification and one's aptitude for particular activities. Being an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is text 14, Lord Rishabhdev was fully independent because his form was spiritual, eternal, and full of transcendental bliss. He eternally had nothing to do with the four principles of material misery, birth, death, old age, and disease, nor was he materially attached. He was always equipoised, and he saw everyone on the same level. He was unhappy to see others unhappy. He was the well-wisher of all living entities. Although he was a perfect personality, the Supreme Lord and the controller of all, he nonetheless acted as if he were an ordinary conditioned soul. Therefore, he strictly followed the principles of Vanashrama Dharma and acted accordingly. In due course of time, the principles of Vanashrama Dharma had become neglected. Therefore, through his personal characteristics and behavior, he taught the ignorant public how to perform duties within the Vanashrama Dharma. In this way, he regulated the general populace in household life, enabling them to develop religion and economic well-being and to attain reputation, sons and daughters, material pleasures, and finally eternal life. By his instructions, he showed people how people could remain householders and at the same time become perfect by following the principles of Vanashrama Dharma. So by his own example, Maharaj Rishabhdev taught how to live in a way that satisfies one's material needs and desires and yet doesn't degrade one. The principles by which this can be done is called Vanashrama Dharma. If one follows Vanashrama Dharma, then gradually one is purified. So the purpose of Vanashrama Dharma is not exactly to satisfy our material needs, although that is the means, because of the purpose of Vanashrama Dharma is ultimately to develop our love of God. But these are intermediary principles that allow us to satisfy our material needs as well as in a religious way that doesn't contradict our development of love of God. Because nowadays, what do people do? They have desires. Everyone has material desires. But what do people usually do? They whimsically take those desires and try to satisfy them in any way they can, and the result is degradation. So this is the art of living in the material world. We may not be fully pure, but at least we can satisfy our material desires in a pious religious way that doesn't go in the exact opposite direction of developing love for God. So this is the art of living in the material world. Text 15. And he did this. So Maharaj Rishabhdev, because he was the king, so he was dealing in the material world, and he had a particular service to do, particular mission rather. And he set the example in everything, even though he was above everything, because he was the Lord. He was above following the principles of Vanashrama Dharma, yet he set the example by following them. Because, as text 15 explains, whatever action is performed by a great man, common men follow. So that's also explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Yad yada chalati sheshtas. Prabhupada explains in the last line of the purport, the leaders of society must be so ideal that by following them, one can be relieved from the clutches of material existence. That generally is not the case. Text 16. Although Lord Rishabhdev knew everything about confidential Vedic knowledge, which includes information about all types of occupational duties, he still maintained himself as a Kshatriya, as the king, and followed the instructions of the Brahmanas as they related to mind control, sense control, tolerance, and so forth. Thus he ruled the people according to the system of Varnashrama Dharma. Again, he set the example. Even though he was the Supreme Lord, he listened to the Brahminical advisors. So he ruled according to the system of Varnashrama Dharma, which enjoins that the Brahmanas instruct the Kshatriyas, the administrators, and the Kshatriyas administer to the state through the Vaishyas and Sudras. 17. Lord Rishabhdev performed all kinds of sacrifices 100 times according to the instructions of the Vedic literatures. Thus he satisfied Lord Vishnu in every respect. All the rituals were enriched by first-class ingredients. They were executed in holy places according to the proper time by priests who were all young and faithful. In this way, Lord Vishnu was worshipped, and the prasad was offered to all the demigods. Thus the functions and festivals were all successful. No one likes to possess anything that is like a will-o'-the-wisp or a flower in the sky. What does that mean? What is a will-o'-the-wisp? Or like a flower in the sky. Flower in the sky. Yeah, that's the actual meaning of phantasmagoria. What does that mean? What is a phantasmagoria? It's not real. So do you want to possess something that's not real? If someone said to you, I'd like to give you 1 billion fake dollars and I'll only charge you $100 for it. No one cares for that or an imaginary, I'll give you an imaginary BMW or a Jaguar. Yeah. Yeah, a will-o'-the-wisp, that's what it is when you're imagining. There's a particular reference for this, or there's a fire that sometimes appears in Ireland, I think, over the peat, that seems to appear in Ireland over the peat bogs. And it's called the will-o'-the-wisp, something like that. So no one likes to possess anything that is like a will-o'-the-wisp or a flower in the sky. Why? For everyone knows very well that such things do not exist. When Lord Rishabhdev ruled this planet of Bharatvarsha, even common men did not want to ask for anything at any time by any means. No one ever asks for a will-o'-the-wisp. In other words, everyone was completely satisfied, and therefore there was no chance of anyone's asking for anything. The people were absorbed in great affection for the king. Since this affection was always expanding, they were not inclined to ask for anything. Here was Prabhupada's purport. In Bengal, the word Gora Dimba is used. You know the meaning of that? What is Dimba? Yes. Angora.
Horse.
Yeah. So in Bengal, the word Gora Dimba is used, which means the egg of a horse. Since a horse never lays an egg, the word Gora Dimba actually has no meaning. In Sanskrit, there's the word Kapushpa, which means the flower in the sky. No flower grows in the sky. Therefore, no one is interested in asking for Kapushpa or Gora Dimba. During the reign of Maharaj Rishabhdev, people were so well equipped that they did not want to ask for anything. They were so satisfied. They were immensely supplied with all necessities for life due to King Rishabhdev's good government. Consequently, everyone felt full satisfaction and did not want anything. This is the perfection of government. If the citizens are unhappy due to bad government, the heads of government are condemned. During these democratic days, monarchy is disliked by the people. But here is the example of how an emperor of the whole world kept all the citizens fully satisfied by by supplying the necessities of life and following the Vedic principles. Thus everyone was happy during the reign of Maharaj Rishabhdev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now we'll move on. There's one more verse in this chapter, and then we'll stop. Once, while touring the world, Lord Rishabhdev, the Supreme Lord, reached a place known as Brahmavarta. There was a great conference of learned Brahmins at that place, and all the king's sons attentively heard the instructions of the Brahmins there. At that assembly, within the hearing of the citizens, Rishabhdev instructed his sons, although they were already very well behaved, devoted, and qualified. He instructed them so that in the future they could rule the world very perfectly. Thus he spoke as follows. Prabhupada's short purport. The instructions of Lord Rishabhdev to his sons are very valuable if one wants to live peacefully within this world, which is full of miseries. In the next chapter, Lord Rishabhdev gives his sons these valuable instructions. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the fifth canto, fourth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Characteristics of Rishabhdev, the Supreme Personality of God. So the next chapter we'll take a week on, if Krishna allows, because these instructions are important and to discuss in detail. Thank you very much, Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Yeah. I just had a question about the sacrifices that you talked about. What kind of sacrifice was it that they were talking about?
In the Vedic scriptures, there are many, many different kinds of sacrifices. They're performed in a ritualistic way and in very much a ordered way. That's set in the scriptures, and there are different mantras or different sacred sound vibrations that are sung, which have potency, and different things are offered. Very often, they're offered into a fire, and different things are sacrificed into that fire, and it's a complicated system. If there are any faults in it, the result doesn't come. If there's faults in the performance, the results don't come. So what this does is it allows people to fulfill their material desires, and because what they're usually performing the sacrifice for are things like a son, or to get wealth, or to have many, many children, or to get some land, or something material in the next life, even. But it allows one to fulfill those desires, material desires, in a way that the first principle is that it acknowledges that one can't fulfill one's desires just by one's own work. So one's success in life doesn't depend on oneself only, in one's own abilities, that ultimately one must please higher powers. So that's the first element of the sacrifice, or the first deeply spiritual principle within the sacrifice. And often in these sacrifices there are many worshipable beings. There are many what we call demigods that are worshipped, or not gods, but somewhere in powerful personalities. But not God himself, because there's only one Supreme Lord. So these demigods are worshipped, propitiated, but the ultimate one who empowers the powerful persons is the Supreme Lord. So gradually, by performing these sacrifices, purification takes place. I don't know if that's... that gives you some idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sacrifice ultimately is meant for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So therefore, there's a Vedic Sanskrit saying, Yajna Vai Vishnu, that sacrifice actually means God. It means, because things are supposed to be sacrificed for His pleasure. And that is a different mood. When one sacrifices for His pleasure out of love, it's a completely different mood that I'll give you something as long as I get something greater back in return. That's not actually sacrifice, that's actually business. But that's basically what most people are capable of doing in this world. But yet it's better that they do business with God in that way than just deal on a completely mundane material level, because at least there's an acknowledgement that there is someone superior and supreme. Yeah, with all so many names and very different concepts. Yeah, from what you're used to, I know.
When earlier on in the readings, when Lord Indra, he didn't provide rain.
Yes.
And then the Lord took the role. But he only supplied rain to his own body.
Yeah.
So what about everyone else?
Yeah. It doesn't answer that question, but it seems to me that he was making a point that God, Krishna, is completely independent. He's not dependent on the demigods. So everyone in the material world has envy in their heart, especially envy towards God, because if we're envious of anyone else, how envious are we of the Supreme Lord who possesses so much more than that person. So Indra possesses envy, because that's the tendency when one is powerful to be fearful and envious. So he tried to show off his power, and Rishabhdev just... So it doesn't exactly say, but certainly... Since he was just making a point, certainly the rest of the population didn't suffer greatly.
So is there any explanation that why Indra, there was some disagreement that Lord Rishabhdev, he took over the rain function of sending rain.
Yeah.
But then later on, Lord Indra
gave him so it may have been something they worked out after. It's hard to tell. Anyway, the details aren't there, and I don't know about them. I'm sure they, in both cases, I'm sure they exist somewhere. I was also thinking that it was maybe some reconciliation on Indra's part. So that would make. That's often what happens, that by some pastime or some activity is arranged by Krishna, such as Indra's envy, and then something comes of it which is part of the plan. So many things are accomplished by one action. Any other thoughts, questions, comments? Yeah.
I was noticing in successive verses it describes Navi's ecstatic love for his son Rishabhdev, and then the next verse he renounces everything.
Yeah. Also Kadama Muni did the same thing after having his son as the Lord. They leave.
Incredible.
Yeah. But this in the purport with of Kadama Muni, when he did that, it explains directly that he did it to set an example. That even if God is your son, you still have to... Because most people think their children are like that anyway. Not nowadays, but... Huh? Yeah, ultimately it's Leela.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts or anything? Yeah.
One other thing, it's interesting that in the last verse that Rishabhdev chose a setting of a compass of diamonds to instruct his sons. Would that just have been because it was a favorable atmosphere for such instruction?
Where else is there was already an atmosphere and there were people there, it sounded like. So he, while instructing his sons, it sounded like he was instructing others as well, including Brahmins. But it sounded like, because it said that the general population was there, the populace. So, because it's, if one wants to live peacefully within this world, which is full of miseries, one can't. If one is materialistic, one can't live peacefully in this world, because the material world is tumultuous by definition. It must, what one doesn't want to happen must happen, and what one wants to happen won't happen, at least some of the time, at least enough to confuse us and make us miserable. It's the very nature of the material world. People that you love die. People that you love get sick, you die. You cause people that you don't want to cause, the people that you least want to cause pain to, you cause them difficulty. And the people that you love the most, they cause you difficulty. That's just one element of the miseries of the material world. But there is a way to live happily and peacefully within this world, and the key is to not be in the world. Practically speaking, one can be on one level in the world, one must on one level be in the world. But practically speaking, one's heart cannot be in the material world. One cannot invest one's heart in the material world, because it's always shifting and always changing, the material world is. Which money?
Atrimony.
Yes.
Desire as well, pure desire.
Yeah.
And his son, like a god. And what is different between his case and that case of Mahajan? Why in Atrimony's case he appears three persons?
Because I think it describes that his concept was somewhat vague of who the Supreme was, if I remember correctly. So therefore he wasn't clear. And therefore, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva came, if I remember correctly.
Because he addressed his various...
In a general way. Because yayetamam prapajante, the more clear we are about who God is, then the more focused our love will be. And Krishna reciprocates with that. So we generally, people in general, if they have any concept of God, have a very vague concept of God. Just he's up there somewhere. So then we tend to get vague replies. But God is not vague, actually. He has very specific characteristics. And the more we study the Bhagavatam, the more we hear of those. Okay, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Maharaj Rishabh Dev.